I watched, I was up all night watching, like, videos about Diddy's crime.
I haven't looked into it. I've
done a lot of research.
Bleffery Blepstein.
Well, so, okay, so here's what happened in his life was crazy. So, like, basically, he was like, not like academically, but like sort of social overachiever. Like he was one of those kids where he's like 12, he has a good handshake, right? And that, you know, somewhere along the way of doing that, you know, he did shit like he would start like a taxi company when he was going to Howard. He was one of those annoying 19-year-olds who's like, I already own 3 businesses.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, I took notes.
Wait, question. How tall is he?
The none of my research got me that, but I can ascertain he's about 5'8". So somewhere along the way, he meets this guy named Andre Harrell. And Andre Harrell is like, hey, Diddy, you should work for the company I work at, Uptown Records. And I'm not saying this. Several insane people have said this, and I think it's probably true. This started like a 5 to 6 year period of Andre Harrell just like viciously business molesting Diddy. Diddy would like blow this guy in the Uptown Records office a lot. Like it was like a Bocce Baza type thing.
Okay.
Because Andre Burrell, a record executive named Clive Davis, purportedly did that to him.
So this is like, so the music industry is basically like British boarding school.
Yes.
Mm. It's like you get molested and like if you go through it, your like reward is being able to molest other people.
Well, okay, that's what's crazy. After like 6 years of getting molested, Diddy's like, okay, now I'm a street guy. And he immediately starts killing people.
Right.
Like it's one of the craziest, like, you know, transformations in anyone's adult life, like ever. Like he probably, when he first got that internship, he's never thought like, I'm going to have sex with Andre Harrell. He didn't like, no one would think that at the time. And he definitely didn't think like 7 years from now, I'm going to have like goons. I'm going to like, he has so many bodies. His bodyguard killed like Suge Knight's best friend. He probably set up Tupac. He probably like helped kill Tupac.
I mean, do you I've suspected him being involved in Biggie's assassination
probably,
as well. Because, I mean, like, I remember, like, being in, like, high school, like, when all this went down, and it was just, like, everyone loved Ready to Die, and then Biggie's murdered, and then out of nowhere, there's just, like, the guy who was in the background of that album going, yeah, Bad Boy, just comes out with a song that's a ripoff of Sting, and all of a sudden, he's everywhere, and he's like, hey, remember the guy we all loved? Well, here's his best friend singing.
Yeah.
Diddy was like, he single-handedly set back grandparents' opinions on rap like 40 years at that time, because he was like, that's a really insane thing about all of this. It's like he probably has killed like 20 people, you know, he's amassed all this human trafficking money. He is like a Jeffrey Epstein figure. He's like Veet from Watchmen. If Veet from Watchmen dedicated all his mental resources to like making stand-up comedians like put things in his asshole.
I butt plugged Kevin Hart 30 minutes ago.
And it's all that, but he's also like the worst rapper ever.
Oh, he's singing, yeah, but terrible. He didn't even write his own terrible lyrics.
Yeah. No.
That's insane.
Okay, but what was the actual, what are the allegations of, I mean, was he like holding on to passports? Was it like underage? Was it?
So with Cassie, like Cassie Ventura, who he like, they separated and divorced. That stuff came out in court documents where it's like he was physically abusive. I think there was like, you know, what Saudis do with domestic workers, like the passport thing. He purportedly blew up Kid Cudi's car because he was like,
he was angry at him for being a good rapper.
Well, Kid Cudi was like, he was talking to Cassie like long after they separated.
Ooh.
And Diddy like was already having her followed around by private security and shit. There's this journalist called Jaguar Wright who used it like, she would say all this stuff like, you know, oh, he like Andre Burrell fucked him and he fucked Andre Burrell and like all the, and I used to be like, okay.
So
like,
there was a Courtney Love who like, you know, blew up his spot early and no one listened.
Yeah, exactly. Right. She said all this like sex trafficking stuff was going on. And I was like, I could probably see it, but like, I don't, this woman just says that like he's fucked every guy ever. But then like the federal government is like, yeah, he was doing this basically. Like they raided his house for human trafficking. So I believe everything she said.
Did you see Chiwi Dog's tweet about Diddy's verse on Mario Winans, I Don't Wanna Know, and the music video for it?
No.
Okay, hold on. I'm seeing if I can just play this video. Play Diddy's verse on this real quick.
Yeah. I don't wanna know your whereabouts or how you moving. I know when you in the house or when you cruising. It's been proven my love you abusing. I can't understand how a man got you choosing. Undecided, I came and provided my undivided. You came and denied it. Don't even try it. I know when you lying. Don't even do that. I know why you crying. I'm not applying no pressure. Just wanna let you know that I don't wanna let you go. And I don't wanna let you leave. Can't say I didn't let you breathe. Gave you extra cheese. Put you in an SUV. You wanna ice, so I made you freeze. Made you hot like the West Indies. Now it's time you invest in me. Cause if not, then it's best you leave.
That's crazy.
I am very anti-literalism in lyrics or whatever. That really sounds like he's telling on himself.
Yeah.
Okay, now keep in mind, and shout out Chibi Dog for pointing this out. In the music video for this, he's watching secretly recorded tapes of his ex-lovers and has a huge drawer full of VHS tapes with people's names written on it.
How? Yeah, that does sound like he's telling on himself. Also, blowing up someone's car is a very weird, like, that's fucking IRA. Exactly. Like, that's such a dramatic way. You don't got shooters, you got bomb guys.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to kill people with car bombs.
Yeah, it sounds like it never works. Yeah, yeah. Because it's just so many moving parts. It's like,
you gotta be the Basques to do that.
Yeah, right. You have to know they're gonna be in their car. It can't be anything weird. Like, oh, like, if your entire assassination thing hinges on a car bomb, it has to be someone like Luis Carrera Blanco, like a head of state, yeah, or like head of security apparatus, where they like, you know, their itinerary, right? If it's a normal person, you can't do that, because with a normal person, it's like, well, you think they're supposed to be in their car because they're supposed to like go to the dentist. But what if they lost track of time because they were reading the Wikipedia article for Jaguars for like 71 minutes? And then it's like, well, now you just blew up a car with no one in it because you're stupid.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Wikipedia for car bombs. A lot of them are.
This is why Amber would miss her car bomb.
I just had it up. So there's provisional IRA, like Sir Maurice and Lady Gibson, but it looks like this is the list of deaths.
I know, like, Pablo Escobar did a lot of car bombings. I mean, he blew up a whole plane full of people too.
It's
got to be way easier to blow up a plane. They blow up on themselves.
That proves how bad it is, though. There would never be a Wikipedia list that's like list of people killed by a gun.
It would be too long.
Anything else is too long.
The ratio is going to be like very low.
Yeah. Car bombing, though, it's like they're probably including successes and failures on the same page.
Well, it's me, Amber, and Felix today.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
One last thing. I just remembered. With Cassie, he purportedly loved making her have sex with other men while he watched.
Yeah, it's kind of psycho shit.
It's like, it's psycho and like horrifying, obviously, but it's also like, it's so weird that he's like a controlling, like family annihilator type psycho, but also like that. It just, I don't know. I get pathologies don't make sense. They're not supposed to, but like,
yeah. Well, I think what we can all conclude from this is that hurt people hurt people.
That's, yeah, that the truth. People in the music industry hurt people in the music industry.
It's cool how he was never able to like molest Biggie. Like, Biggie was like a real street guy.
He was fat and ugly.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, but
I don't think it's about that, you know?
Yeah.
It is Monday, April 1st, and I have an important announcement to make. You know, we've been solicited many offers to sell out the show. But I'm very glad to announce on today's show, we will be joining the Club Random Podcast Network. I mean, like, it was a great opportunity. They pitched a show to us. We're going to have some, like, obviously the main show will now be hosted on the Club Random Network, now Patreon. And we're going to do some, like, exciting side projects. Like, I'm working on a new project. It's sort of like an interview show where I talk to people about how to overcome their vaccine injuries through smoking weed. I have another show where I basically just review the escorts and sex workers that I patronize. And, you know, like, nowhere to go but up from here.
Me and Bill we're starting our own show on the Club Random Network. It's called Riffer's Delight. It's a four-hour show, and we have a producer. He just throws us topics, and me and Bill, we just go.
I haven't found a co-host yet for Dumb Sluts, but but it's coming. Watch this space.
Yeah. No, and my other program is I will interview the escorts and sex workers that I frequent, but I will give them SAT questions and then make fun of them if they don't get it right.
Mm-hmm. We're transitioning you into one of those podcasts where there are like 40 people at the table for some reason.
Yeah.
I would love us to be one of those shows where it's like, yeah, it's 40 people, all guys who are like trying to look like Andrew Tate, like, all guys who are wearing bald, like a very shallow V-neck and bald. And they're like, there's just like a bunch of women, random women that they hate in the studio at all times. I love those shows. Well, where it's not a show. It just exists to like be clipped for TikTok.
Yeah.
Where like a woman will be like, I don't know. Sometimes I want to go to a restaurant for a date. And a guy's like, you fucking stupid bitch. Does your house have a kitchen? You should kill yourself, slut. I would love to be either of those.
Speaking of like the podcasts that are just like, or just streamers that are just made to be on TikTok. I saw this clip yesterday of Aiden Ross talking to this guy, and he asked him like the single best question I've ever heard. Do you believe in the Big Bang Theory or the Pangria Theory?
That was awesome. That was awesome.
First of all, I love like the Sangria theory of tectonic continental drift, but like the Big Bang Theory and Pangea are not mutually exclusive scientific theories.
The Big
Bang Theory is like the most plausible explanation that we have for the existence of the universe. The Pangea developed billions of years later. It's like one doesn't contradict the other at all.
No, I believe there were land masses before there was a planet.
Did you know, I like fell out of my chair when I found this out. Aiden Ross is Jewish.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Jewish people could be named like shit like Aiden.
Yeah. But I told you like my friend taught at Barron Trump's like fail prep school, Columbia, no association, but they kind of want
Columbia Prep.
Yeah, it's sort of a lie by omission.
Yeah.
Their mascots are just like two peacocks that wander the grounds.
Wait, I thought that was the school I went to. No, my school did have peacocks wandering the grounds.
What is this thing? This peacock?
It's the cathedral school. But the peacocks are no more, actually. They've gotten rid of the peacocks.
They've still, I mean, that's the whole thing. Columbia, the peacocks, they're trying to be like, convince people without saying explicitly that's what they are. But I remember her saying, I didn't even know Jews could be dumb.
I think it's beautiful. Like, it's in 1921. My great grandparents or like grandparents, they could never imagine like not just being like assimilated and like white in that way, but like so assimilated and so much accepted as white in America that like you could like a Jewish person could be Aiden Ross.
Yeah.
Like it's beautiful. Like it's awesome. I've watched like clips of his because of Hassan. Like I've been there when him and Hassan have like kind of gone back and forth. And he is like his understanding of the world. It's not even like a regular person from the Middle Ages. It's like,
he's like below spontaneous that. Generation.
Yeah.
It's like something.
A guy who's been kicked in the head by an ox.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Casper Hauser.
Yeah.
Like he grew up outside for the first 20 years of his life. I really just whatever he has going on, I support it. I love it.
Yeah, it means you've arrived.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do like a Patrick Bette David style show on the Club Random Network.
I love that.
Remember the clip you watched of Hassan about him like grilling those guys about like did they want like what was it like what did you learn about first? Real estate investment or being gay?
Yeah. He was like Patrick Bette David is this somehow not Israeli guy, His name is Patrick Bet-David, and he runs a show called The Valuetainment Podcast.
Yeah, that's a classic, like, Catholic dad, Jewish mom, like, ass name.
You would think.
But he kept the fucking, like, the mom's name because, obviously, the Catholic dad left.
He's Armenian. That's what's really crazy.
That's
wow.
But he, like, he's just, like, this, I don't know. I think he just, like, materialized in 2019. I don't think he existed before that. I think Pangria burst him out. But he was, like, he does this, like, boneheaded podcast where he interviews just, like, different people that live in Miami, basically.
Yeah.
It's not, like, explicitly themed that, but they're just the different types of, like, stupid people you meet in Miami and, like, former mafia guys. And he was, like, tell me about you. How did you learn how to do real estate and like whatever stupid guy.
Like, what inspired you to do real estate? And like, they were like, oh, like the TV shows we saw about like Selling Sunset or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, but could you do real estate if you were thinking about being gay? And his entire point was like, coming out of the closet makes it harder to do real estate.
Or it was just that like people like that you can be like influenced into being gay in the same way you can be influenced into thinking like I'd like a career in real estate.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of respect that more than like the house flipper rage bait that I've been really interested in lately, where they're like, we've ripped up a 70-year-old parquet so we can put click and lock fucking vinyl, gray vinyl shit. We covered up this window with bricks. Like, that, it's clearly like when you look at it too, I read the comments where it's like, you know, hate from Duluth or whatever. But like the people who like those, I think there's a really good kind of method to the madness where they're like, people will spite buy an ugly house. So like the people who see it and are like, they don't have an opinion on it aesthetically, but they're like, yeah, totally. Build walls around the open floor plan. I'm going to buy that fucking house. I'll show you coastal elites with good taste. And I think these people, these flippers do really well.
I'm buying a Frank Lloyd Wright house and I'm changing it into like a recreation of the deck of the Enterprise D.
Yeah, it's very impressive, but it is like they kind of get me with the rage bait because I'm like, you don't deserve to own a house.
I do a similar thing, but with like one of my favorite Instagram accounts is Chef Reactions. Mm. And it's a professional chef looking at like the absolute gore that people like for meals that they prepare, like just like meat shapes of various like meat and cheese shapes of various kinds that are.
Always with like Kmart dressing room lighting.
Ooh, yeah.
And like the like, I mean, it's the equivalent of like the high flash food pics of like early kind of Instagram.
Yeah.
Where everything sort of looked chartreuse for some reason.
Yeah.
I found it. There's a place in, I don't know, Echo Park or something called like Nocturnal Eats or something. I don't remember what it's called. It's one of those like, you know, dumb slut taco trucks or like they all have, they're like, we're really cool. But all of the food, I will find this place and it should be our art. All of the food is shot with bisexual lighting.
Ooh.
It's the weirdest thing to look at like a cheese fries that look like they're on Euphoria. It's really disorienting. And it's like, this aesthetic has gotten out of hand.
I hate that the thing you alluded to, that thing where it's like, it'll be a pizza place, but it's called Best Fucking Pizza.
It's so awful. It's like the fuck waffle, like era of internet all became restaurateurs.
Yeah. David Simon is just coming up with new restaurant names now. Well, to move on here, today, of course, is April 1st, a day for fools of all kinds. And I thought today, like, this would be a perfect day, like, some of the, like, it seems like the topics that we discuss on this show, they never really fully go away. And even though like this seems like it is an April Fool's bit. Wait, what do you got there?
I'm sorry.
What do you got there?
The Nocturnal Eats. Sorry. Go on.
No. So even though this story may sound like it is an April Fool's joke, I assure you it is not, because the stories broke yesterday on the normal Fool's Day. Havana Syndrome is back. Havana Syndrome is back. There was a 60 Minute story about it last night. And talk about the king of April shenanigans. Michael Weiss has a new article up on some website I've never heard about, talking about Havana Syndrome and how it's real.
Is it Puck?
No, it's not Puck.
Wait,
I've never heard of these things. Like, okay, the name of this website,
it's called The Insider.
Fucking, that is.
It says reports, analytics, investigations. And it says unraveling Havana Syndrome. New evidence links the GRU's assassination unit 29155 to mysterious attacks on U.S. officials and their families. And like, I think this is coming after like a year, 2 years now when like the American scientific, you know, like people have just said like there's no known existing technology that could reproduce these results. We have no idea like this is real. And then another report I read last week that showed that like all of the supposed victims of Havana Syndrome show no brain damage or any lasting medical side effects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, even if it does exist, it's not that bad. I mean, like,
yeah. I want them to do the fucking, like, fake white lady disease, like, Instagram turned it where they're, like, selling jewelry they made on Etsy or something like that. Like, they need to start, like, going into the Pashmina business. Like, find the silver lining to your hypochondriasis.
Insider seems like the website that Eddie Brock and Venom work for. Such a fucking fake website.
Yeah. There's so many. Like the opening montage of Venom where they're showing Eddie Brock's life and he's like,
Eddie Brock with boots on the ground today in the Mission District chasing a lead.
Everybody
some
knows that Silicon Valley overlords at Google.
Last
Facebook,
time I was driving around asking uncomfortable questions.
Homelessness is only increasing into the thousands.
I do a lot of things like investigations, analysis, riding motorcycles. just the weather, but I'm digging into the grue. But no, I just wanted like Jacob Silverman shared this this anecdote from the Michael Weiss piece, and I wanted to share it with you guys and just see if you can find like any possible reasons to be skeptical of this story. It says here, the first sighting may have happened exactly 7 years earlier. Contrary to the information that has been made public about Havana Syndrome, that it began in the eponymous Cuban capital in 2016, there were likely attacks 2 years earlier in Frankfurt, Germany, where a U.S. government employee stationed at a consulate there was knocked unconscious by something akin to a strong energy beam. The victim was later diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury and was also able to identify a Geneva-based Unit 29115 operative. The incident occurred within months of Russia's 2014 invasion of Ukraine, in which a stealthy, nearly bloodless seizure of the Crimean Peninsula in February and March 2014 gave way to a roiling 8-year-long dirty war in the eastern industrial heartland of Donbas, close to Ukraine's border with Russia. So this is just stated that like he was knocked unconscious by something akin to a strong energy beam.
They don't know for sure. We're saying it's akin to a strong energy.
Did anyone see the strong energy beam? Like what?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, what's like a strong energy beam, yeah, but exactly. It isn't. Like,
it's like either there's an energy beam type weapons or there aren't.
It's like that thing where you like, you know, you take the straw halfway down, the straw paper halfway down, and then you blow it or something.
Yeah. Like the thing that always drove me crazy with Havana Syndrome, and like this one specifically, because it's the most egregious of this. It's like, okay, if you're firing like, you know, either sound waves or radiation out, right? You can't, unless it's a laser, like chances are you're going to like hit a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you were like firing a sound wave that gave someone like diarrhea, like whatever this is, how like only one guy is reporting that this happened, like in this instance, that it didn't hit anyone else.
It's one of my favorite, like, later era Simpsons jokes where it's like the CIA or whatever, and they're saying, what do we get from the satellite footage? Just a bunch of roofs.
And it's like, if Russia had, like, basically a rail gun that can make anyone depressed. That's what we're saying they have. Why aren't they just, like, blasting 20 of those at Kiev right now? Like, they're doing better in that war now, but, like, when they started getting owned and, like, they lost all those Su-34s, why weren't they, like, oh, shit, how many depression rays do we have?
Well, different wars require different weapons, and this is the invisible war. This is the invisible energy war, and they're sapping the energy of our diplomats who, like, wake up and they're like, I have a headache, my tummy hurts. I think I may have been hit with a invisible energy directed weapon just this weekend, because you know, I mean, I went out and like, you know, normally when I drink 10 to 12 beers I feel fine the next day. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, the next day I don't know what happened. I felt terrible.
I don't know, maybe the baseline for Kiev depression is just way more you know, Slavs, they're probably impervious to sad shit at this point.
That's a great point. On Western diplomats.
Well, yeah. That's a great point.
It's like people who build up an immunity to arsenic.
But okay, like there, okay, like there's a line. He was knocked unconscious by something akin to a strong energy beam. Where it's just like, I don't know, like maybe like you are rendered unconscious, but you're just like, I woke up and you're like, how were you knocked out? I don't know, but it was something akin to a strong energy beam that I experienced before. But there's another detail in here I want to talk about, where it says here, the victim was later diagnosed with traumatic brain injury and was also
akin to a strong energy beam
and was also able to identify a Geneva-based unit 29115 operative. Like, what does that mean? Like, he was able to, like, so he saw a guy on the street of Frankfurt. Was this right before the energy beam rendered him unconscious? Or did he just see a guy that, like, they showed a photo to and they were like, does this look familiar? And they're like, my God, it's him.
Wait, it's who is this guy again?
29155 guy.
Who's this guy again?
It was a U.S. government employee stationed at the consulate in Frankfurt, Germany.
That doesn't mean anything. Did he like, did he work in the mailroom? Like, what the fuck is this? Why are we listening to this person with like Art Bell ideas? We don't even know his credentials. Yeah. He could be a security guard.
It's also like, I'm assuming this guy is probably a spy because like that's the only people Havana syndrome happens to.
But he has like a brain injury.
Yeah.
That could just be a normal guy who got clocked a few more times.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
They don't specify, like, how he picked this guy out of the lineup, but it's like, if he is a spy, it's like, well, yeah, I hope you know who's in GRU. Like, aren't you supposed to? Like, they're proving that he was hit by an energy weapon by saying he's, like, somewhat competent at his job. Mm-hmm. It's like proving a USDA employee was attacked by Magneto. Like, look, they can identify projectile cows.
I recognize that helmet anywhere.
Yeah. It's also like, did he see the guy during or before?
Well, that's
the
question. Like, it's just like, he was able to identify a Geneva-based unit 29115. It's just like, now we have to know about unit 29115 or 155.
Yeah. Like, this whole thing feels like a Liam Neeson movie.
It's just more bullshit. Yeah. Like,
even down to the name of the publication, where like all Liam Neeson movies are called like The Guy.
Yeah. Liam Neeson would write Insider in a movie. Where I would love to see him play a journalist in the Havana Syndrome movie.
After the incident, I took it upon myself to stalk the streets of Dublin looking for more unit 29115 operatives.
He's almost never in Ireland. He's always in like Texas or something, and they never explain why he has an Irish accent. In that movie, like the ice truckers or whatever, his brother doesn't have an Irish accent. Never explained. At one point he says, my Irish ass. And like his brother's like, hey, how you doing? I mean, he has like his brother has a traumatic brain injury. Maybe he lost it.
Amber, I know you and Nate are big fans of the Liam Neeson direct-to-video. Have you seen I think it's called Blacklight?
No.
Okay, like that's the thing.
He makes three movies a year.
He makes about four or five movies a year. This is like, fuck, is it Blacklight? Okay, there's one where he's like, he's an FBI agent who's like the FBI's fixer. Like they send him in to like do the dirty work, you know? And he basically like he gets wind of a plot to assassinate an obvious stand-in for AOC. Because, like, okay, in the movie, the FBI director, played by Aidan Quinn, sheep dips an FBI agent into, like, the AOC campaign, and he's there to undermine her or assassinate her or do, like, you know, COINTELPRO shit, but he falls in love with her.
Right.
He falls in love with her, and he can't do it.
That's just another thing I like broadly about his movies is that you think they're going to be super reactionary, but they're just confused.
Yeah.
And, like, it makes me feel a lot better about the sort of state of dumb guys, you know? Like, they're not really, like, driven by anything too ideological. They just want to see the niece. And luckily, he has such a huge like breadth of work. I want to be a completist, but I'm not even there yet, you know? Like he has so many movies and they're all increasingly insane. The air marshal one, I love that one because people are like, Nonstop. You're not fit to be an air marshal. And he's like getting wasted. He's like, but I'm the air marshal. It's like, he's not fit to be the air marshal. Yeah. He's wasted.
Also the commuter. That's an insider-ass movie.
Yeah.
The commuter.
Rocks, yeah.
I love him because it's like, it's clearly not like a Bruce Willis situation or a Steven Seagal one where it's either he's being exploited or he just is like in tax debt. Like mm-hmm. he clearly, like he doesn't need to do any of these, but he's love just the like, game. He gets shitty script after shitty script where it's like, okay, you're going to play the world's best luggage manufacturer and you're kidnapped by a cartel and you have to make them like the best luggage at gunpoint so they can transport heroin. And right. then they test the luggage by shipping your daughter. And
but little do like, they know you used to be an assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And he's yep. like, this sounds great. And he's not like, did he, I forget what like, Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant thing it is, but the
oh,
thing
the
where,
the Life is Short, like with Warwick yeah. Davis, where I'm a gay homosexual actor with AIDS.
I'm
sorry, you have AIDS.
An African prostitute. like, this has just gotten a bit heavy. Like, oh, he's signed on to be Frank Drebin in the Naked Gun reboot. Right. Yeah, right, and I'm like, that, yeah, he's mad
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, he's like a funny guy. He's clearly like not super self serious.
Yeah,
and like he has to know on some level these movies are stupid, but like
he's Irish. Yeah,
yeah. He probably thinks it's funny to do these movies.
He's a good sense of humor.
I mean, he's got some competition now. If you're talking about Irish guys with a sense of humor entering the world of action movies. Now that Conor McGregor is in the new Roadhouse movie. have you seen like the sort of like press junket interviews with Conor McGregor?
I don't know what the fuck. Like, I've never seen anyone react to any substance like how Conor McGregor is reacting.
It is crazy.
It's gonna be a problem though because the accent is. I like. Dated a guy who went to the same high school as him for like many months and I still only understood like every third word.
I feel like I fidget when I'm on camera, so I'm a little bit like sympathetic to Conor McGregor, but he cannot sit still. No, it is insane.
I do too. Like, I have a bad camera presence too, but like there's having a bad camera presence and being fidgety, and then there's like what Conor is doing, which like he was acting like he's been in an iron lung for less 37 years.
He's going to vibrate like through the floor.
Yeah.
Like his body frequency will match the atoms in the ground. And no.
He's too full of beans to have any sort of gravitas. He's full of beans. He's to have any like gravitas as like an action star.
I will say, having watched the movie, that he does put it to somewhat good use in, I would say the funniest part of the new Roadhouse is just the way Conor McGregor walks. Which is like he has spent 2 days on a horse and has an entire car battery up his ass.
He's super bow-legged. He was like that. That's not even an affect. He was like that in his fighting career. It's squatting.
He's always walked like that. And he actually had a very weird sort of wide stance.
Yes.
Even in his prime that, you know, it worked for him pretty well.
They make it work. They play it as a good joke in the movie. It's funny.
But yeah, Coke alone doesn't make you do that, nor do steroids, but it's like, I don't, like, if it comes out that he's, like, smoking acrylic paint, that's like the only, that would make so much of his behavior make sense, because it's like he's this downward spiral for him, right? It started when he was, like, he was at his stupid restaurant that he started, the Black Forge.
Oh, this was he glassed some 80-year-old who didn't want to drink his whiskey or something. Yeah.
This old man, like he offered this old man a shot, and he was like, oh, "No, that's all right." And then he beat the shit out of him. And it's like, what the fuck?
Like, I'm just picturing him like smoking acrylic paint now, but like out of an apple. He's a college student.
Well, as long as we're discussing action stars who walk and run weirdly, I know you must have seen the photograph of one of the victims of the terror attack in Moscow being greeted as he like comes out from under anesthesia by Steven Seagal in a doctor's in a doctor's coat.
Oh my, that you would think you were in hell.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a nightmare.
It's like, this is like the next thing Steven Seagal is pretending to be, is like a trauma surgeon. And he's like, I just want to let you know, we're going to snatch every one of these motherfucking bullets out of your body. And we're going to put them in the bastards who did it to you.
My Wakakahira was Dr. Ben Carson.
He was my senpai.
He told a motherfucker how to use his hands both to kill and to heal. See, these hands
can separate conjoined twins.
I would
could put your brain into another brain.
I would absolutely watch that movie though, like Dr. Rinpoche or whatever.
These hands can separate conjoined twin, or they can conjoin both you motherfuckers together.
Exactly.
Which one is it gonna be?
He's getting more and more cubical too. Okay, I've noticed, okay. Just shape wise.
Let me ask you though, like if you were the victim of some brutal violent attack and you were like, you know, shot like 10 times and somehow survived, and like you're regaining consciousness for the first time. What action movie star would you like there to be in the hospital to greet you as you wake up?
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, okay. I don't think there's a question there, right? He's charming. He's funny. Yeah. He doesn't overstep his bounds by any means.
Not an action star, but like I've really liked Bradley Cooper since he's been doing these interviews where he's like, I went to Leonard Bernstein's house and I jacked off on his bed. And I love him.
I love that you can't come out as gay in Hollywood, but you can say that shit and still have a career.
All right. No, I mean, I guess it's not an action star, but I would like to be received as I come out from like surgery by Bradley Cooper as Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be, who left Snoopy in the vestibule? And I'm just going to be like, raise my spirits, you know?
Elizabeth Hurley, that's another good choice.
Okay. Yeah. Now, this is just getting ridiculous here. And I'm like, Elizabeth, I just found out I'm your long lost nephew. Yeah.
That's the move I would call.
I've been very naughty. I've been very bad, Elizabeth, auntie. I want to start calling Elizabeth Hurley auntie.
But Steve, like, it's got to be especially weird for a Russian to see Steven Seagal, because it's like, it's not like he was even famous over there. Like, it's just... It's like all you know.
Right, maybe he's super famous for all the movies that, like, you wake up, you're like, my God, it's the star of Sniper, Special Ops Sniper.
Yeah. I mean, he did a bunch of movies in like former Soviet states.
It's the star of General Commander. Thank you, sir.
You know, he's probably friends with some oligarchs who like own tigers and women.
He's the mercenary.
It's the star of the Asian Connection. But it's like, I don't, like, no one watches the, like, Russia, they have their own film industry, and like those Steven Seagal movies, I know that they're made just to cover up like a human trafficking operation, like I just, like, all you know that guy from is that he's like the fat guy that the president hangs out with sometimes.
Yeah.
You have no cultural context for him.
Probably.
Imagine you just saw your best friend get their head blown apart by a 7.62 round, and you feel something wet on your chest, and you black out. You wake up, and this fucking idiot is wearing a lab coat. He's wearing a lab coat. He has fucking 4D bracelets on.
He's wearing a stethoscope, but he like puts it on you and makes you listen to your own heart. He's like,
that's the rhythm of life right there.
I'm trying to think of like the equivalent if you're just like not familiar with this, like, you know, kind of who he is. Is it like, it would be like waking up for us to like a Gerard Depardieu or something.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, I know who you are, but this is sort of, but this is weird. Also, why are you, you need to take care of yourself. You should be in this bed. You should be in this
bed. Thank you, Gerard. It's the star of Green Card in 1492, The Conquest of Paradise.
You know, he was like, trying to do acupuncture on all of them too.
Oh yeah. Like, or at least Reiki. He was like just like hovering his hands over like children with cancer.
I bet he does that fucking weird cup shit.
Oh, definitely does cupping.
Yeah.
Especially the one with like the little sticks with the smoke in them.
It's just like, I would like to recreate Hard to Kill with him. It's like he coaches me back from coming out of a coma or something. Mm-hmm. Which is like, acupuncture was a big part of Mason Storm's recovery in Hard to Kill. So I would hope, like, he just like, he's like, I need you to get me these supplies. And then he unscrolls a piece of papyrus and takes like a Chinese brush paint and like dips it in ink. And then just like, I need a prescription for motherfucking Percocet. And then just like writes it out in Chinese calligraphy.
I love that. My favorite thing.
Percocet and pangolin.
I need a motherfucking virgin boy egg. But I love the thing in that, like, that's a great movie. There's so many great, like, the blood bank line is, that's what got me into Steven Seagal when he goes, yeah. I'll take you to the bank, Senator Trent, the blood bank. But the part I like the most is absolutely a part Steven Seagal demanded they put in the movie, which is Kelly LeBrock, who later became his wife and ex-wife, who plays the nurse who's taking care of Mason Storm while he's been in a coma. And this is, by the way, this is 2 minutes after a scene where Mason Storm's family was violently massacred and annihilated.
Yeah.
Just killed in front of him. Fast forward the montage, and she's like, vitals look good, and his dick's as big as ever.
Yeah, she checks it out. Yeah. She goes, I haven't seen that before.
We're like not even 150 seconds removed from like his kids being like, dad. No, it's just getting ripped apart by shotguns.
Yeah, you don't get that kind of style with a Johnny Toe movie. Yeah.
And then, my God, he's got a missile down there.
Yeah. Like, that was not in the script.
My favorite part of the movie.
He told her to do that, yeah.
Outside, you know, him working into the screenplay, how big his dick is, and the blood bank line, is the scene where, like, Kelly LeBrock has taken this, like, formerly comatose man that she's known for, like, a day to stay at, like, her friend's gigantic ranch house in, like, some part of beautiful part of California. And she's, like, nursed him back to health, and it's, like, a training montage of him running weirdly up a hill and, like, yeah. punching trees. And then, like, he's just doing all this shit, and, like, she's watching from the background, and it's, like, the camera zooms in on her, and she's looking at him, and she just goes, Mason Storm.
Mason Storm.
Just shaking your head in amazement.
You scam.
Fuck, we can talk about Seagal all day, but I got two quick stories about people quitting, and I'm beginning with Turkish President Erdogan, because, you know, his party AKP just suffered a defeat in some local elections, and we were talking about before we got on the show, Erdogan, like, he's pretty old, like, he's not, doesn't have to do this much longer, but we would like to see him get real.
Yeah.
It's time for him to get real. And by that, I mean, use Turkey's arsenal against Israel, because he's a NATO country.
Dude, it's been 20 years of this shit. 20 years. Every time Israel does something fucked up, he's every time for 20 fucking years, Erdogan has been like, this could be the time. I'm getting up. I'm getting, oh, you better hope I don't get over there. And it's like people are still stupid enough to get excited when he says this. Like, he really went far this last time when he's like, we could invade Israel at any time.
I mean, there have been huge protests in Turkey for Gaza.
But he's never going to do anything. He's never done anything. And it's like, now, like, okay, you're not going up for re-election. Everyone fucking hates you. You massacred the Turkish lira and therefore my retirement plan. And, like, just lob, like, 20 cruise missiles at Israel. Just do it. Like, what? What's going to happen? You're going to lose the election?
Oh, well, mm-hmm. We're going to kick you out of NATO at a time when Russia's like the scariest thing in the world?
Right. Yeah, you got to make a big scene when you leave a job.
But, like, we were talking about this before we got on, because, like, currently right now, Israel is doing everything possible to start a war with Iran, including killing some Iranian diplomat Iranian consulate in Syria.
The head of Iran's operation in Syria, an IRGC general. And it's like, we know Russia's, like, Russia just lets Israel bomb Syria whenever they want. We, like, I'm sorry, Russia heads.
And we said they have, like, a fourth of their air force in Syria.
I don't know the exact number, but they have a ton of fucking planes over there. They have some really cool planes. I won't get into it. But
it's a parking lot, is the point.
Yeah. Like, Erdogan, if he does this, and I'm not even saying he has to, like, full-scale invade Israel, right? If he just, like,
like, you know, like a pitcher in the baseball. Just give him some chin music, high and tight. Mm. Brush him off the plate on your way out before you get the reliever comes in.
It's like you guys could block out the sun with your weirdly shaped drones that are apparently very effective. If you do that, everyone will love you. Like forever. No one will remember all the dumb shit you did.
True.
Like, people will stop calling you a watermelon seller.
Is that what people call him?
Well, he was literally a watermelon seller. There's a famous clip of a guy being like, I don't want that watermelon seller. But, you know, you're like 76. You're really tall, so we know you're not going to live that long.
Mm-hmm.
Got the Great Dane heart.
Yeah, your wife is just, all she does is like pray. And you had to, look what you did. You invaded Syria because Bashar al-Assad's wife said your wife was frumpy. And you won't just like launch a few missiles at Israel?
Yeah.
Like, what do you have left to lose at this point?
Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously, this is heartbreaking as a longtime AKP supporter. I mean, they were instrumental in the success of our program. So, I mean, like, we wish them the best.
You dance with who brung you.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anything from the fucking purity bros who stood sat this election out.
Yeah.
When secularism comes... we tried to warn you.
Yeah, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And the second news about sort of a departure of a global figure is Lizzo's quitting music. Lizzo announced that she's fed up with all the hate and she's quitting music. And this is coming on the heels of her appearance at Radio City Music Hall, you know, sort of fetting Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama. And people made fun of her for that because she was like, hey, like, let's party, y'all. Like, you know, while they're doing a genocide. And she's fed up with it. She's had enough of it. She's done with music. I just want to share that just the other night, I just got into LA and I saw a clip of Lizzo performing at Radio City Music Hall for Joe Biden. And I texted it to Matt and I said, Matt, the Democrats have activated the Lizzo contingency. And he just replied, my God.
Hard to think of a bigger victim in regards to Israel and Gaza than Lizzo.
Was that a pun?
No, I actually wasn't going for that.
I'm taking the heat for this one. Her fucking handle is Lizzo Eats. You can't fucking like put that out there and then get mad at me.
I think it's funny how her sexual harassment scandal involved eating. Like, she couldn't just do normal sexual harassment. She was like, no, you have to like eat food out of a pussy.
Apparently, she's abandoned body positivity for body neutrality or something.
Yeah, I know.
Which,
yeah,
I'm sorry,
that.
She stole that from me. Also, like, don't love yourself, don't hate yourself, just get hobbies. Just fucking quit looking in the mirror generally. Also, her swimwear line is going to be worse than Rihanna's lingerie. It's going to be so bad.
Well, this is a good segue. I talk about a weird sexual harassment. This is a headline here. Matt Schlapp accuser dropped groping lawsuit after $480,000 settlement. Not guilty.
Not guilty. Not guilty. Just be the kids. This is just like when Gucci got off on self-defense.
Yep.
Matt Schlapp's the real king of the streets.
I hope you didn't pay them because they ain't have no success.
I love the Teflon goon. I love it. Like they settled this and he's like one down 38 to go.
I just want to read a little from this.
By the way, 20,000 under $500,000. I'd say that's a win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, this is from the New York Times. It says a Republican operative who said he had been groped by Matt Schlapp, the head of one of the nation's largest conservative advocacy groups, dropped his lawsuit against Mr. Schlapp after receiving a $480,000 settlement, according to three people familiar with the deal. The operative, Carlton Huffman, 40, had accused Mr. Schlapp of grabbing his genital area when the two men were alone in a car after a campaign event in Georgia in 2022. He sued Mr. Schlapp last year, but announced this week that he had dropped the lawsuit. In a statement, he said he had not been paid by Mr. Schlapp or the American Conservative Union, the group Mr. Schlapp oversees. Instead, Mr. Huffman received the six-figure settlement through an insurance policy, according to three people familiar with the deal. So he didn't even have to pay money out of pocket. He just has an insurance policy against groping men and being sued.
You got a dick grabber insurance?
How do you use insurance money to settle a groping lawsuit?
If I got a sales call from an insurance company that was like, we know that you're always going around in cars and trying to jerk off underlings. I would call him a bomb threat.
But how do you take out an insurance policy against you doing a crime?
Well, obviously, you guys don't watch enough daytime TV. Yeah. Flo the Progressive Lady, the Geico Gecko, they're talking about this all fucking day.
He's like this entire match lap thing. I haven't seen it in the media that much, which is disappointing because it's hilarious. I love how his wife, like, he's accused of jerking off or trying to jerk off like dozens of men. And his wife is like, good old cancel culture, huh? And it's like, that's not like, it's not like he made a spicy joke. He's gay.
He's doing car pranks with his friends.
He's a gay man that you're married to.
It says here that these people, they said...
Where's her insurance policy?
Yeah. These people said they were motivated to disclose the details because they were upset over what they described as a victory lap from Mr. Schlapp after the lawsuit was dropped. When the lawsuit was dropped, Mr. Schlapp released a lengthy statement that did not mention Mr. Huffman and instead criticized unnamed liberals and the left-wing news media for coverage of the lawsuit. On social media, Mr. Schlapp reposted messages that falsely claimed he had been cleared of wrongdoing and asserted that Mr. Huffman had apologized, which he had not.
That's awesome. Like, so cool.
They're not even gonna like move him to the side. They're just so reactive that they're like, no, we can't like show weakness, which like normally is actually kind of a smart impulse.
Yeah, never apologize.
Normally, yeah.
You're saying the guy that you groped apologized to you. Like, it's a little different than not apologizing yourself.
Well, it's also like, that only works three times tops. How many men are going to come out and like, that's not going to go well.
It's just so like reckless too. You know what I mean? Like, it's like.
Just get a fucking prostitute.
Exactly. Like, you have the money. Why are you like these guys who like have wives and kids? And you're like, hey, just so we have it on record, I would love it if I could, you know, have you sit on my face.
I gotta say, though, when did the lawsuit happen and when did the alleged groping happen?
The groping happened in 2022 and the lawsuit was just settled. So
this guy was 38 years old. It's probably pretty hard to find a gay prostitute over 30.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And that could be what he liked. Like, maybe it's a situation where his fetish is like a tight, like a Republican, like father of two who wears a quarter zip.
Yeah. It's very specific, but as we know, right wing sickos.
Yeah. He's just Matt Schlapp. He's like an evil gay Republican husband. Like him and what's that other the guy who's married to fucking Meghan McCain?
Oh, Ben Domenech.
Ben Domenech. Those are the evil ones. Marcus Bachmann's the nice one.
Marcus,
He likes picking out outfits for his wife. He's not doing sex crimes or anything. Yeah.
It's like he's like, don't get me wrong, he's a bad, like he runs a conversion center, which you know, you can think
we're just saying he's a good husband.
I can imagine what goes on at places like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah, like, yeah. That is like a Ford assembly line for an molestation. But like he's just so much more like fun. Like when he's like, I love when she goes campaigning because I can pick out her outfits. And it like it was they were daring people to say something about that.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And Marcus Bachmann was so good.
I'll be sad when he does. Mm.
All right. So I said on the last episode I was going to do this episode and I think we should get to it in this episode. It's the big piece in The Atlantic by Peter Baker Jr., The War at Stanford. And basically, this article is like this Ivy, like this Stanford fucking apple polisher is like, oh, all the Ivy League universities on the East Coast are getting too much credit for being anti-Semitic. Now let's do an article about the university I go to, and then like you know everyone like his dad was just like Theo's such a wonderful boy, he's whip smart, and Ben Bradley would love his writing if he were still alive, and like this is just like it's such an obnoxious article, especially in light of the fact that like you know. What's the headline I read this weekend? Like Israel establishes kill zones in Gaza. And it's just the whole thing is like, oh, like people are too angry about this. And it's tearing apart the college that I love going to.
Ugh, a little dork. I bet he's a male cheerleader.
It was one of the most obnoxious things I've ever seen, because it was like his parents, obviously, Susan Glassman and Peter Baker, but also like just assorted other Lifetime media people just talking about what an important young go-getter it was. And it's just like, we talked about it last week, but it literally is just like, I like some of my friends, but I don't like the kids I'm not friends with.
Yeah.
And it's like even if this wasn't in the backdrop of a fucking genocide, them just like taking out every fucking hospital, every bakery, everything. Even if it was about like, I don't know, like whatever bullshit issue before, this has no place in any newspaper. Especially now.
I wonder too, like, is it possible, because I haven't read this, is he really a like school spirit fucking dork, or is his actual, you know, precociousness just making a name for himself? Like, is this just like, you know, I would say, like, does he care?
It's more the latter than the former, but like, let's judge for ourselves. Let's
take him at his word.
Let's dive into The War at Stanford by Theo Baker for The Atlantic. It begins like this. One of the section leaders from my computer science class, Hazma El Boudali, believes that President Joe Biden should be killed. So it's a strong opening sentence. I mean, I certainly couldn't argue with that. But he goes, quote, I'm not calling for a civilian to do it, but I think the military should. The 23-year-old Stanford University student told a small group of protesters last month. I'd be happy if Biden was dead. He thinks that Stanford is complicit in what he calls the genocide of Palestinians, and that Biden is not only complicit, but responsible for it. I'm not calling for a vigilante to do it, he later clarified, but I'm saying,
he clarified.
He is guilty of mass murder and should be treated the same way a terrorist with darker skin would be. And we all know terrorists with dark skin are typically bombed and drone striked by American planes. El Boudali has also said that he believes that Hamas's October 7th attack was a justifiable act of resistance, and that he would actually prefer Hamas rule America in place of its current government. Though he later clarified,
college is just for stupid people. Like, this is just stupid people.
Though he later clarified that that doesn't mean that Hamas is perfect. When you ask him what his cause is, he answers peace. I switched to a different computer science class. So like, I know what he's going for here, but like, I would just like to say on the record that everything Hamza El Boudali said was unimpeachable as far as I'm concerned. Because look, Hamas isn't perfect, but neither are the Democrats or the Republicans.
Yeah. Do you want to be Trump or not?
Yeah. But I like the line, I switched to a different computer science class.
Yeah, yeah. How much is that coming up in computer science?
Well, I mean, like, his point is he just wants to study computer science, but unfortunately, Israel killing 30,000 children has made it difficult because people are angry about
is
it.
Is this guy raising his hand?
This is
like,
I mean,
talking
like, well,
about
this guy, like, it's I think it's kept intentionally vague. Like, this is not in a computer science class. This is at a protest at Stanford that this guy was speaking at. But he makes it seem like he's just like, everyone get out your laptops and let's start writing Death to the Zionist Entity.
Yeah.
So it says here, Israel is 7,500 miles away from Stanford's campus. Thanks for that little factoid there, where I am a sophomore. But the Hamas invasion and the Israeli counter-invasion have fractured my university, a place typically less focused on geopolitics than on venture capital funding for the latest dorm-based tech startup. Few students would call for Biden's head, I think, but many of the same young people who say they want peace in Gaza don't seem to realize that they are, in fact, advocating for violence. I mean, I think they're pretty, I don't know if they're that confused about it. Whether what they did is justifiable or not is like, you know, open.
I don't believe it's justifiable or unjustifiable. It's just what happens when you turn up the heat.
Well, I mean, like, I would say confidently that what Israel has done is completely unjustifiable.
Not justifiable.
Yeah, it's not justifiable.
I think that's pretty not difficult conclusion to come to.
So yeah, he continues, extremism has swept through classrooms and dorms, and it is becoming normal for students to be harassed and intimidated for their faith, heritage, or appearance. They have been, I mean, I remember I was intimidated for my appearance as a nerd in college all the time. I was singled out for that. It says they have been called perpetrators of genocide for wearing kippahs and accused of supporting terrorism for wearing kiefas. So it's just like fashion police problems on campus.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of hat are you wearing? It can mark you as a friend or foe. But it says the extremism and anti-Semitism at Ivy League universities on the East Coast have attracted so much media and congressional attention that the two Ivy presidents have lost their jobs. But few people seem to have noticed the culture war that has taken over our California campus. It's like, this is just like,
who cares?
I believe every president of every university should lose their job.
Is the premise of this article like that it's inherently different when it happens at fucking Stanford?
Yeah, because he's like,
this is East Coast, West Coast beef.
I mean, I think he's saying like, oh, like, you know, at Princeton and Yale, like they're, you know, they love protesting war, but out here at Stanford, we're too busy making dorm-based app technology that we're hoping to sell.
My God, like,
it's Cali vibes.
Yeah. But it says here, for months, two rival groups of protesters separated by a narrow bike path faced off on Stanford's palm-covered grounds. The sit-in to stop genocide encampment was erected by students in mid-October, even before the Israeli troops had crossed into Gaza, to demand that the university divest from Israel and condemn its behavior. Posters were hung equating Hamas with Ukraine and Nelson Mandela. Across from the sit-in, a rival group of pro-Israel students eventually set up the blue and white tent to provide, as one activist put it, a safe space to be a proud Jew on campus. Soon it became the center of its own cluster of tents with photos of Hamas's victims sitting opposite the rubble-ridden images of Gaza and a long and incomplete list of the names of slain Palestinians displayed by the students at the sit-in.
What was in those tents? Lactate? What safety? I hate colleges so much. It's such a like a weird way to contain actual protest. It's such a weird like fucking like hamster habit trail for political action.
Yeah.
Why isn't this just an email to your grandparents?
<I know. laughs> Well, this
here's
literally
what I
is.
Saw at literally,
it's just been published in the Atlantic.
This is it's like I would rather read like someone's cousin describing a movie they saw than this. This is so shit. Like, who fuck? What is your fucking point? Why did this need to exist? If I was his grandparents, I would be like, shut up.
I mean,
if I was his grandparents, I wouldn't finish this article.
Yeah. No, this is one of the most pointless things ever committed to language.
If I was his grandparents, I'd be like, I'm sorry that happened, or congratulations. Yeah. But it says
here's $10. Go see a Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, this is another like little like glimpse as to like the mentality behind this article. Stanford has a policy barring overnight camping, but for months didn't enforce it.
Oh my God! Call the press. Call Woodward and Bernstein. The overnight camping policy is selectively enforced. Holy shit.
Yeah.
If you were my kid and you told me that, like out of breath, I would sell you to the circus.
Hey,
shut the fuck up.
If you want to get rid of them, just invite like three homeless people there. They'll clear it out.
It says here, we've had protests in the past, Richard Saller, the university's interim president, told me in November about the environment and apartheid. Protests about the environment, apartheid, Vietnam. But they didn't pit students against each other the way this conflict has.
Yes, yeah, students have never disagreed. If everything, there was a big Coca-Cola commercial, everyone holding hands.
I mean, they did kill some Vietnam protesters on an American university in the 70s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the National Guard weren't actually students there.
Well,
but
what happened with the overnight camping policy?
That's the most important.
Maybe they were enforcing the camping
policy. Yeah, you're right. Well, I mean, like Felix, like if I could like attempt to seriously answer your question about why this article, why this email to Nana and Pep, why this is getting published in the Atlantic, and I think it is because of like the massive and undeniable weight of public opinion among people under the age of 30 about Israel, and I think outlets like the Atlantic need to keep promoting these mother boys.
I always get this way before mother boy.
Oh God, it's mother boy already?
To give their readership the impression that young people are not fully swayed by like Palestinian propaganda or whatever.
Right, right, right. It's like, it's a new form of Hezbollah where it's like, we can't be like explicitly pro-Israel anymore. We can sort of sneakily imply that the entire Palestinian movement is tarnished by anti-Semitism without saying it outright. But also make it so like, that the default position, the normal position is just like, hey, it's 7,500 miles away. I don't care. It doesn't affect us, which like ignores the massive amount of Israeli lobbying, the presence of Israel in all aspects of American public life in the security state. This can only function on the idea that like Israel is just like another country.
Yeah, the call is coming from inside the house. Yeah. Like, don't pretend that it's fucking. I still fucking can't stand. Like, again, if I was his grandparents and I got an email this long, even if I was like a racist Zionist, I would regard it with the same observational kind of distance as when like my cousin spent an hour explaining Pokemon to me. Like, it's just so like, shut up. Even if I was racist, I would say, shut up.
Yeah, it's going through, it's so belabored to arrive at this stance of like, well, you know, it just, it maybe, you know, campuses shouldn't talk about it. It's like an Ivy League version of those posts where people are like, I'm having a beer and being normal.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well then can we like stop sending Israel money and weapons?
Yeah.
Like if it's just going to be like, hey, I don't care.
But all of this avoids the economics of it. Like that's what campus politics do. It's just like this big red herring. It's like, just what is the budget of this university?
Probably like it's equivalent to like some nations
insane.
That are like,
it's
the,
insane. Yeah. And being like, all right, should we have a say in the budget?
Right.
Should we have a say who's on campus? Like, maybe we've kicked out ROTC. We've decided certain people aren't allowed on campus to lobby for certain things. I think it's fair to say a lot of Israel groups constitute essentially like a soft conscription campaign.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty, like, just, like, I dare you to just, like, try and, like, reorganize the budget around, like, not fucking supporting Israel. Right. Instead of, like, doing this, like, loser nerd shit.
This is like, yeah, it's like the ship in the bottle kind of protest.
Yeah,
you know?
It's literally, the universities are intended at this point to contain actual, like, political action.
If this is just, like, a regular country that's 7,500 miles away, surely it should be no problem to ban it, a foreign nation, from lobbying on campus, right?
Yeah. And again,
that should be fine, right?
It's soft conscription. It's like, it's militaristic. If ROTC can't be on there, I don't see where the fuck Israel's allowed to be on
there.
Yeah,
a foreign nation.
Going on here, it says, when the university finally said the protest tents had to be removed, students responded by accusing Salar of suppressing their right to free speech. This is probably the last charge he is expected to face. Salar once served as a provost at the University of Chicago, which is known for holding itself to a position of strict institutional neutrality so that its students can freely explore ideas for themselves. Salar has a lifelong belief in First Amendment rights, but that conviction in impartial college government does not align with Stanford's behavior in recent years. Despite the fact that many students seem largely uninterested in the headlines before this year, Stanford's administrative leadership has often taken positions on political issues and events, such as the Paris Climate Conference and the murder of George Floyd. After Russia invaded Ukraine, Stanford's Hoover Tower was lit up in blue and yellow, and the school released a statement in solidarity. When we first met a week before October 7th, I asked Salar about this. Did Stanford have a moral duty to denounce the war in Ukraine, for example, or the ethnic cleansing of Uyghur Muslims in China? On international political issues, no, he said. That's not a responsibility for the university as a whole, as an institution. I asked Salar why he had changed tack on Israel and not Nagorno-Karabakh. We don't feel as though we should be making statements on every war crime and atrocity, he told me. This felt like a statement in and of itself. So it's like, I think it's telling here that like the guy that he's mostly talking to in this article is just the university president.
Yeah.
It's also funny and telling that he said, when I first talked to him the week before October 7th, like what, like sophomore at Stanford gets direct access to the president just on a random weekday?
Especially like Stanford.
Yeah.
I think he wrote some other article that exposed some Stanford professors' malfeasance that got a lot of burns. So I think he's got the ear of
the
administration.
He's got some kind of,
yeah.
Look, I never talked to my university president, nor did I want to.
No.
I didn't even know who the fuck his name was.
I think his name was Mort. I don't know.
When we met back in November, I tried to get Salar to open up about his experience running an institution in turmoil. And like, Stanford is not in turmoil because, like, as you said, Amber, they have an endowment that's probably like the equivalent of like some European countries.
$36.5 billion, which puts them just above El Salvador in terms of GDP. Yeah.
It says, what is it like to know that so many students seem to believe that he, a mild-mannered 71-year-old classicist who swing dances with his anthropologist wife, is a warmonger? Salar was more candid than I expected, perhaps more candid than any prominent university president had been. We sat in the same conference room as we had in September. The weather hadn't really changed, yet I felt like...
Oh my God, shut the fuck up! Who cares?
How could he be a
What do you eat for breakfast that day?
You'd be a warmonger. He does the Lindy Hop.
He said, yet I felt like I was sitting in front of a different person. He was hunched over and looked exhausted, and his voice broke when he talked about the loss of life in Gaza and Israel and the fact that we're caught up in it. A capable administrator with decades of experience, Saller seemed almost at a loss. It's been kind of a roller coaster, to be honest.
Is this a red carpet interview? What the fuck is this? Like,
you should be interviewing Conor McGregor about fucking Roadhouse. People tend to blame the campus wars on two villains, dithering administrators and radical student activists. But colleges have always had dithering administrators and radical student activists. To my mind, it's the average students who have changed. Elite universities attract a certain kind of student, the overachieving striver who has won all the right accolades for all the right activities. It's such a surprise that the kids who are trained in the constant pursuit of perfect scores think they have to look at the world like a series of multiple choice questions with clearly right or wrong answers.
I prefer that than looking at the world as an essay question, which you are doing.
Yeah.
You're doing right now.
Yeah, he's blue booking this shit.
Or that they think they can gamify a political cause in the same way they ace a standardized test.
Oh, you are gamified? Like, this is a resume padding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, as you'll see in the next paragraph, like, as I said earlier, I think this is, like, the thrust of this article is to assure his parents and grandparents that, like, the student activism of, like, people who are against the war or pro-Palestine, that it's just sort of, like, trendy and, like, they're just, they don't really believe it. They're just sort of pretending to because it's cool.
There should be a show where they subject this guy to different batting cages. And they increase the speed of the ball every week.
By the way, the people who say you're just into this cause because you want to be cool are the least cool people on earth. So what he's saying might be true for some people. Let's say for a few people, yeah. They're bandwagoners.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
What does that make you?
Yeah.
A big virgin dork.
He goes, it's not that there isn't real anger and anxiety over what is happening in Gaza. There is, and justifiably so. I know that among the protesters are many people who are deeply connected to this issue, but they are not the majority. What really activates the crowds now seems less like a principled devotion to Palestine or to pacifism than a desire for collective action, to fit in by embracing the fashionable cause of the moment, as if a centuries-old conflict in which both sides have stolen and killed could ever be a simple matter of right and wrong.
Why does this get to be an article that he's just imagining what's in the minds of everyone at the protest? How is that a premise for anything? There's nothing, you can't do anything where you just imagine the mental state of like a few dozen people you've never spoken to.
Well, he found one like edgelord at his computer science class and he's like trying to get the reader to extrapolate everything from that.
I'm just skipping ahead here. It says, the real story at Stanford is not about the malicious actors who endorse sexual assault and murder as forms of resistance, but about those who passively enable them because they believe their side can do no wrong. You don't have to understand what you're arguing for in order to argue for it. You don't have to be able to name the river or the sea under a discussion to chant from the river to the sea.
Oh, okay.
The Mediterranean and the Jordan. Can I weigh in now?
Also,
can I
I'm
weigh
sorry.
In now, Theo?
It's an apocryphal fucking story, but they've said, I mean, like, it's probably apocryphal. I don't know. I can't confirm it. But there's, like, a thing where I think it was during Iraq, like, the first 2 years or something, where they went around asking Americans, could they find Iraq, I think Afghanistan, and maybe North Korea on the map? And the people who were more likely to be able to were the people also more likely to want to invade.
Yeah.
Don't trust people who know geography.
Yeah. One of the highest sources, like demographic groups that most supported the Vietnam War while it was going on were college aged males.
Yeah.
Who were like educated and because you have to be.
Because they weren't going.
You
most
have
of
to be
time.
Educated to be that fucking stupid.
They could usually
Being able to find the Gaza Strip on a map is like less impressive to me than to know that it exists and people are dying there and to be like, oh, that's wrong.
Well, and it's also just like, it was just way easier for them to get out of the draft.
Yeah. Goes, this kind of obliviousness explains how one of my friends, a gay activist, can justify Hamas's actions, even though it would have the two of us, an outspoken queer person and a Jewish reporter, killed in a heartbeat.
I will support anyone who promises to end your writing career. I don't care if they kill you. I don't care if they chop your fucking hands off. Anything to prevent this from happening again. This is the real never again.
Yes.
I never want to hear this article ever again.
A similar mentality can exist on the other side. I have heard students insist on the absolute righteousness of Israel, yet seem uninterested in learning anything about what life is like in Gaza. I can tell you what life is like in Gaza. It's
short. Pretty, we have pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nasty, brutish, and short. Yeah.
I'm familiar with, this is a great line. I'm familiar with the pull of achievement culture. After all, I'm the product of
the pull.
I fell in love with Stanford as a 7-year-old lying on the floor of an East Coast library and picturing all the cool technology those West Coast geniuses were dreaming up. I cried when I was accepted. I spent the next few months scrolling through the course catalog, giddy with anticipation.
Holy shit. I wanted
to learn everything.
How many swirlies would it take to re-educate him?
This guy should be conscripted into going to one of Diddy's parties.
Here's the thing, too. If he, like, fucking supports what Israel is doing, join up.
Yeah.
I would love it if Diddy traumatized him so bad that he can never write again.
All right, well, I'll stop traumatizing you, Felix. I just want to read two more things from this article. But my frustration with the conflict on campus has little to do with my own identity. As in a high achieving Jewish kid.
That's just completely irrelevant.
Across many conversations and hours of formal interviews I conducted for this article, I've encountered a persistent anti-intellectual streak. I've watched many of my classmates treat death so cavalierly that they can protest as a pregame to a party. Indeed, two parties at Stanford were reported to the university this fall for allegedly making people say "fuck Israel" or "free Palestine" to get in the door.
He's just mad about not getting invited to parties. He's just saying that.
What are people supposed to do after a protest? Like wear an armband of mourning and just like sit shiva, not look in a mirror for a week? What the fuck are you talking about?
And this is great. A spokesman for the university said it was unable to confirm the facts of what had occurred, but that it had met with students involved in both parties to make clear Stanford's non-discrimination policy applies to parties.
Also, again, real quick, like he said he did hours of interviews?
Yeah.
Where's a single other voice besides this like one person?
Yeah, the university administrator. And also, when he published this article, he was like, I spent the last 6 months writing this article. When were you going to class, dude?
Yeah, yeah.
Do your goddamn homework.
How did this take 6 months?
Yeah.
There's no one he's talking to. He didn't even talk to the guy who said the stuff, who I bet he's fucking misquoted or very selectively quoted or whatever. Or the guy was hungover. It's college. I love college. But like, why wouldn't you want to talk to that guy? Like, at the very least being like, what do you say? Like, Hamas, what do you mean? Like, that would be a good question to ask someone.
I would say anything to get him to stop talking to me.
Yeah.
Like I would take any position, anything.
That's what that whole intro scene read as to me, is this Theo guy badgering this guy being like, oh, so you think Hamas should be the government of America? And him being like, you know what? Yeah, fuck it. Hamas should be the government of America.
Yeah, it felt like someone getting frustrated in the middle of a conversation. You're absolutely right. Like it's made up. It's woke toddler for like fucking right wing Zionist dorks.
Like depending on the context or the time of day Theo Baker talked to me, I would say either I rock with Hitler, you know, I'm an AKP supporter, I like Modi.
Yeah, whatever.
I think
a fuck off.
I think Pedro Castillo, I was the 8% of Peruvians who approved of Pedro Castillo by the end. I don't care anything to make you stop.
I'll stop with just like one last sentence from this article. As a friend emailed me not long ago.
I have a friend, I swear.
As a friend emailed me not long ago, a place that was supposed to be a sanctuary from such unreason has become a factory for it.
Oh my God. Then go to math club. Who cares? What the fuck
just
are you
doing? Transfer universities, man. Like,
go to University of Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
No one knows what any of this shit is there. Okay. Go there. Like, there's nothing you can learn about. Right. You are genetically an annoying and bad writer because you have no soul. You can never say anything that's interesting. The moment you say something that is interesting, the Mahdi will return. It will be the mark of the end of time. It doesn't matter where you go. You could go to college in Kazakhstan. It wouldn't matter. You will produce the same quality of article.
Well, the entire thing is just about college. He's not talking about, like, Gaza. Yeah, he's not talking about what's happening to Palestinians right now. Like, it's like, hey, you wonder why they did that shit? wouldn't you have a wouldn't you start from that premise at the very least to say, like, is this reasonable? Is this not reasonable? Like, he kind of like just skipped the biggest part of the conversation, which is the genocide part.
Yeah. Well, he says the so-called genocide. I mean, he disputes that categorization. But yeah, I mean, I guess to summarize this article, I mean, I just think like this is part of this ongoing bargaining process among liberals who, consider themselves good Democrats, but like, you know, still love Israel. And it's this bargaining process where like they know they can't come outright and say, I think it's good that we're annihilating the people of Gaza or annihilating Palestine. So they have to find like this endless receding horizon of complexity and nuance.
Yeah.
To like, mm-hmm. you know, like,
the reason this took 6 months is because it became less and less fucking defensible what Israel was doing. He kept having to rewrite it so that he sounded more balanced against the most horrifying thing that's happening right now.
Yeah. And like, this attempt to kind of like wish away both like the reality of the horror of what's happening, but the reality of people's strong feelings about it. And the idea that like this is an issue in which like we are not going to like find some sort of resolution in which both sides will be happy to like engage in reasoned debate over.
Stop going to college.
I would love to see Deadliest Warrior come back, but every week it's a different Deadliest Warrior taking on Theo Baker. I would love to see Theo Baker versus the Taliban, Theo Baker versus the RA, Theo Baker versus ATA, which
Steven
we
Seagal.
Never saw. Steven Seagal.
Yeah. I'd be fine with him like versus the IDF. They're not going to be nice to him either.
Here's this. I'd like to see an episode. I'd like to see Theo Baker versus a real job.
Yeah. After this shit done, you're going to be wishing for a motherfucking W-2. Yo, ass Finnaby has divided his campus.
Oh, man.
All right, we'll be out on time. We're good?
We're way good.
Oh, we're
good. Okay, good.
Yeah, we got come to Jacques' thing on Thursday.
Yeah, April 4th.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
We'll all be there. I'll put links to it in bio. That's all we got.
Okay, right. Cool. Till next time, everybody. Bye.